Welcome into the All Ball Podcast. I'm your boy, Doug Gottlieb. Thanks so much for downloading, subscribing, and rating. Let's start with David Fizdale. He was fired by the New York Knicks. And while many of you might think that he'll get another job, and he may, probably definitely in TV in the short term, I don't think he's doing a Shawshank Redemption, right? Where at some point he's going to climb through a pile of shit and hop out the other side and be like, I'm free! But had Fizz simply waited, had patience, he might have gotten the Lakers job. Really close with LeBron, a longtime assistant with the Heat. Fizz will do well for himself because he's a good dude and he's well-respected. But there's a couple things here, okay? First, should he have been fired? My answer, yes. Yes. Is it fair? No. You know what else isn't fair? Life. Life's not fair. But when you look at a team, and I will grant you, they were playing against the top of the league, right? Like, it's really important to point out that their schedule, that they went on this terrible losing streak, was just, I mean, it was like a baton death march. Take a listen to the teams. 76ers on the road, Spurs, Nets they lost 2-2, Raptors on the road, Sixers, Celtics, Bucks, Nuggets. Like, those are all playoff teams. They're all really good teams. But the problem is, you get beat by 44 and 37 in back-to-back games in the NBA, and it looks like your team quit on you. You know? And when your team quits, the coach has got to go. Or players have to go, but there's so many new pieces. Now, what's really at play here is, I think the Knicks overplayed themselves, overplayed their hand. You know, they thought, hey, listen, we have the first ever combination of black head coach, black general manager, black president, and New York, and the new arena, and we're going to get Kyrie and KD. KD gets hurt. Kyrie decides he doesn't like the Knicks, he likes the Nets, and they really didn't have a plan B. They just didn't. They just signed guys, you know, like Marcus Morris and Julius Randle, just signed guys. So do I think that their team is good? No. You know, do I think he deserved to get fired because he's a bad coach? No. But you get beat by 44 and 37, your team quit, you're going to lose your job. That's the way the business works.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, there's a lot of movies that have been remade. Have you noticed that a lot of movies have been remade over time? And one movie that has not been remade is one that starred Robbie Benson. It's called One-on-One. It comes to mind because One-on-One was filmed at Moby Arena in Fort Collins, Colorado. Yeah. Anybody remember this movie? I do. Man, that was obviously what people remember most about the movie is the final scene, you know? But on the actual cover, it's, you're not big enough, you're not sharp enough, you'll never make it. Robbie Benson, who probably truthfully wouldn't be big enough, smart enough, tough enough, whatever. 88% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was filmed in 1977. Wow. And the female co-star was Annette O'Toole. Pretty cool, right? Benson wrote it with his dad, Jerry Siegel, and it was directed by Lamont Johnson. I bring it up because wasn't he the first person to be in the transfer portal? Right. Henry Steele is a native high school basketball star in a small town in Colorado. He goes to Western University in Los Angeles. Of course, it's actually filmed in Colorado. He's a little bit flamboyant, and he was bullied by older players. And of course, there was a senior tutor, Jeanette Hayes, who he fell in love with. But the bigger part is that, you know, he walked in and bluntly informed his coach, who said he can't play anywhere early on. Right, that was the head coach. G.D. Spradlin played Moreland Smith, the dictatorial, kind of evil, worse than Bobby Knight in his worst day sort of character. And at the very end of the movie, he said, I can play anywhere I want. You can shove your scholarship, you know, up your you-know-what with a red-hot poker. It's a great movie. Great movie. My question is, how come it hasn't been redone? Right? I guess it's because kids don't take that kind of bullying and that kind of, but the idea of the movie is pretty good. It's pretty good. Anyway, in Fort Collins, Colorado, I've gotten a chance to see most all of the Mountain West teams play already. And I watched San Diego State, and I really like their team. And I like their team because they have versatile players who can, many of them who can score. I mean, that's kind of what comes down to it. And they have older players. Like, look, that's part of the story. One of the stories in college basketball is DePaul. And DePaul, at the time of this recording, just took down Texas Tech in overtime. They remain undefeated. Now, it should be pointed out in the previous game, they fell behind big to Central Michigan and then to storm back and have a furious comeback. But, you know, look at DePaul's team. And Jalen Butts, obviously a third-year part of that program. He's virtually a double-double guy, about 11.5 and 8. Paul Reed, again, another third-year guy in the program. I think Paul Reed has a chance to be an NBA player, has to continue to improve his shooting, but he's rangy and he's really terrific. Jalen Coleman-Lance, who, weird career, great shooter reputation at a high school, goes to Illinois, makes some shots, transfers, I think when John Gross got fired or maybe before he got fired. Anyway, for his time at DePaul, he hasn't been able to make a shot until this year where he's shooting a better percentage. Only 38 from the field, but 37.5 from three. Jalen 3-point Lance. That's a great name, right? And look, of his field goal makes, only 10 have been from two, 21 have been from three. So he's mostly a chucker and ducker. And then they have Charlie Moore, who's a two-time transfer. Started out at Cal, played a bunch, didn't play much at Kansas. And, you know, a diminutive, undersized, more combo guard. But you get that type of age and experience. You combine Darius Hall, an Arkansas transfer, coming off the bench. You know, they actually lost their best incoming fresh. They lost their transfer, right? Kid transferred from St. Louis, super talented kid, didn't even make it to the season, and he gone. And they're better because of it. Why? They have age, experience, and guys that are transfers, two-time transfers, third-year members of the program, they're kind of surrendered to their fate. This is what I got to do in order to win. And then I look at San Diego State, who there's some similarities there, right? You have Yanni Wetzel, who's a grad transfer. He's a tall black from New Zealand, 6'10", 240, can really move. He's averaging like 10 and 6, can play the 4, can play the 5. I don't think he's a 3, but he really is agile. He can switch 1 through 4. KJ Fagan's a Santa Clara transfer. Malachi Flynn, who's their best scorer, he plays the point. He averages 5 assists, but he's not a natural passer. But again, age, experience. Malachi Flynn's already 21 years old. He'll be 22, I think, in March. And they got Jordan Schakel, who, you know, talk about the DePaul guys, have been through some tougher times. Not two of the best years for San Diego State. Jordan's a junior, been through it. Bishop Montgomery High School, you know. And you combine that with Matt Mitchell, who's lost a bunch of weight. I think Matt Mitchell is a junior as well. See, there's some similarities. You have like three transfers, and then you have third-year players, and you have one freshman who really contributes, and you have guys who are kind of surrendered to their fate. None of them are NBA players. Like, could Malachi Flynn make a team because he can just score? Maybe. He can guard, he can score. Maybe. And I mentioned Paul Reed. Could he make a team and maybe get drafted out of DePaul? Maybe. But it's interesting that I do think we're getting to that point in college basketball where it doesn't take all pros. Like Villanova, the second time they won it, you know, they had just pro after pro after pro. And probably none of them are star pros, but just really good, high character, high caliber college basketball players. Couple of transfers, couple of older kids, couple of red shirts, right? A little bit of everything. And they all end up playing in the NBA. Some of them are playing in the NBA because of the reputation established at Villanova. Some of it because of how good they are, right? I mean, there's a little bit of both there. But now we've kind of transitioned to where in college basketball, at least in the start of the season, get old, stay old, older players, guys that have kind of just surrendered themselves to the program. And those are the guys that you can build a really good team around. And you look at some of these teams that are up and down, like a North Carolina. You got a lot of young players. Virginia scores 40 points on the road at Purdue. There's some youth there, but there's also like, look, you took all the pros off the team, you know, take all the pros off the team. And they're like, oh, you're just as good because you're Virginia and you play really good defense. No, the scoring part is the part that really separates the high caliber NBA level talent. And let's also be honest with what happened last year. You know, Kyle Guy is a guy who his stock could never be higher than when he was in college basketball last year. And so now he's playing on a two-way contract for the Stockton Kings in the G League. And if Kyle Guy hangs around for his senior year, he averages 25 a game, and Virginia might be the best team in the country. He doesn't. And in terms of capitalizing on his name and on his success in college, he was smart to do it because he was the most outstanding player in the Final Four. On the other hand, that's what depletes college basketball is not the one-and-dones or the two-and-dones, the guys we know. It's all those other guys who are now fighting it out in the G League or playing overseas that they just get tired of going to school and they're worried about their stock falling. And that's what helps the DePauls. That's what helps. I saw SMU play. And SMU is a similar team that if you haven't seen them, they are really good. They're not great. Right? They're not great. But they're really good. And they're currently, if you look at SMU, they're undefeated at 8-0. And what's the makeup of their team? This is going to shock you, right? But they have Kendrick Davis, who's a transfer from TCU, who just got eligible. Right? They got Isaiah Mike, who's a transfer from Duquesne. I think he's their best player. Those are their two transfers. They're both averaging like 16 a game. For Ron Hunt, who's been there, Ethan Chargois, who's a kid from Oklahoma, who's a versatile inside out. More outside in big. You know, you got Tyson Jolly started at Cal, then went to Baylor, then went to junior college All-American, now is a combo guard SMU, right? Older team. I don't think they have a single NBA player, but tough, gritty, really well coached, and not pros, but they could have everybody back next season. I don't know if they will. Generally, guys run themselves off or grad transfer or somebody decides they have a good year. They want to declare for the NBA. All of that stuff is possible. But there is a theme here. It's not just get old, stay old, but get guys who are really good enough to really help you, not good enough to be NBA players. And especially when you get transfer guys, if they surrender themselves to the program, you got a chance to be really good and kind of come out of nowhere. And there's two programs, SMU in the American, and a team like and DePaul in the Big East that have capitalized on this kind of, we've had a couple of the top high school players go play overseas. We've had many of the top freshmen from last year who weren't really pros declare. You know, so you older players do work, and even some top juniors, if they do well, they bounce before their senior year because they're just tired of going to class. That's kind of the story so far in college basketball. Let me get to a couple of your questions here. How wide open is this season? Does feel pretty wide open. I'll point out that Louisville still hasn't gotten key contributions from two of their top freshmen, and they're the number one team in the country. Now, they beat Michigan, and they got their chest rightfully pushed out, but it should be pointed out that Michigan's coming off, whether it's 3 and 3 days or 3 and 4 days, and then traveling back from the Bahamas, and then coming in and catching an ass whooping and not being able. That's just college kids, that's a level of fatigue you don't normally have. And you're playing at the level of intensity that Louisville plays with. And Louisville's another team. There's a perfect example. Like, I think Louisville, I've told people all year long, and now all of a sudden the rankings have come around to make me sound like a genius. I'm not. But I've said, hey, I think Louisville's number one team. Why? Stephen Enoch, transfer from Connecticut. I think he'll make an NBA team. We haven't seen a ton of David Johnson, star freshman. Lamar Fresh Kimball, who got injured at St. Joseph, so he's a little bit older, transfers in. You know, just solid and steady off the bench. Jordan Rora, who could have gone to the NBA last year, comes back, and he's having a spectacular year this year. Do I think that Darius Perry is a great player? No, but he's a junior, and you combine him with Ryan McMahon, who's, I think McMahon's a grad student, so he's been there 4 years. Like, you got older players to help the David Johnsons of the world, the freshmen, come along, you know, to help Malik Williams kind of come along and grow into their roles.
as contributors. So you have older players that are really good and maybe not yet pros. Samuel Williamson, I think, is going to be really good. I kind of coached him. I don't know. You don't coach much at Pangos, but I coached him at the Pangos All-American Camp, 6'7", 200 pounds, more of a face-up player. But they have kind of the more of a traditional, this is what the high major schools are going to look like if they want to win big. They have three or four upperclassmen. One or two of those upperclassmen have a chance to be an NBA player. I think Enoch will as well. And then they have some star freshmen that they can bring along. And one of the reasons they're ahead of the curve, one, they haven't played the toughest schedule as of yet in terms of road games and who they played. I know they dominated Miami early in the season. But two, they have older players who are ahead of the curve. And they have guys completely surrendered in the program. And then you combine all these teams are pretty well coached. You know, I think Chris Mack's outstanding. Look at what he did. He took Xavier to heights they had not yet seen. And Xavier had been to almost every height before he got there. All right, here's a question from Ben Wynn. My thoughts on Laval Jordan and Butler's fast start. Is Butler Hoops back? I believe the answer is yes. Again, this is kind of a growing theme in college basketball. Do you have older players? Do you have a star senior who's not quite seen as an NBA player? I mean, isn't that Kamar Baldwin? He's been a bucket getter since he arrived on campus. So you got Kamar Baldwin. Henry Badley's not playing that much so far this year, you know? And Badley's a tremendous, tremendous. They have, I think, and when I talked to Laval last year, he was like, look, we got to get back to where when Butler was great, we really, really defended. It's one of the reasons they struggled to find minutes for Jordan Tucker. Last year, they'd slide him in at the four, and he can just really shoot. But he's just not a gritty defender. He's not. Whereas they go and get Bryce Enzi from Wisconsin-Milwaukee, of course, Laval had at UWM, and, you know, undersized, he's listed 6'7", but let's say he's 6'5.5", 235, grown man, tough. And all he wants to do is win. You know, I also think that, you know, they have the shooting of Sean McDermott. They can go to the bench and add in a Jordan Tucker. You add in Aaron Thompson, who's another junior, tremendous athlete, older team, maybe not an NBA player on it, really well coached, really good culture. Yes, Butler is as good as they are advertised. I think, you know, you got Butler and DePaul and, of course, Villanova and Seton Hall. Those are four outstanding teams atop the Big East. And then you got Marquette, who's got Marcus Howard.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
All right, let's get to the NBA for a second. Man, are we doing it again? You know, we're taking what is seen as a popular narrative, and because someone has short-lived success, we've determined that that narrative is not only wrong, but the one who proved it to be wrong is somehow worthy of award. That's Carmelo Anthony, right? Look, Carmelo Anthony was a hell of a player. In his time, during his prime, I believe he was the best pure scorer in the NBA. Now, could you win big with Carmelo Anthony? The answer, and this is based upon data, is no. It's just no. Now, he went to the Portland Trailblazers, who were suffering through an injury plague, disappointing start. And they put together a nice week last week. But we got to this place where he was named Western Conference Player of the Week. Meanwhile, James Harden had 69-11 in a game. Like, what are we actually doing here? You know, what? I struggle with that one. You know, it's not that he stinks. It's that can he accept a role that is not a starring role? Now, at the time of this recording, he's coming off a very solid statistical performance in which the team, the Portland Trailblazers, beat the Sacramento Kings. They bounced back from what's a disappointing performance for him. He was 8 of 16, hit a couple threes, had a couple boards, had one block, plus 15, the plus minus. I find it really hard to find any fault with how he played. And this may be, and look, I actually could make the case that last year, think about the Golden State Warriors, had they chosen to add him down the stretch. Right? Chosen to add him down the stretch. Another guy who could score and stretch the defense. Instead, they stuck with what they had, and they didn't have enough. And I do think that the time away and the thought that he might retire from basketball, like anybody, you see your own, it's like you see your life flash before your eyes. And automatically, if that doesn't change you as a human being when you come back to being away, like, I want to change and fix everything, then there's something wrong with you. That seems to have been the case with Carmelo Anthony. You know, instead of, and I'm sure he has a level of bitterness, but if that bitterness carries on to the courts, one thing. If the bitterness motivates you to prove people wrong when you get the job, that's a completely different thing. He stayed ready, and we'll see. We'll see if his legs, you know, you start to get those regular season legs after having the freshest legs in the building. We'll see if it catches up to him. You know, Carmelo's issues, in addition to being selfish and struggling to play defense for a long time, was he just wasn't big on taking care of his body. Just wasn't. And there was a couple years where he did, last couple years where he got himself into great shape, but his diet was so bad for years that even though he was the best scorer in the game, it still seemed to wear him down some. Look, I look at Melo, and do I think he's a Hall of Fame player? Of course I do. He was, for a portion of time, the best scorer in the game of basketball. The best. Now, we're going to see him on Friday night against the LA Lakers. And keep in mind, if you think it's something that the league collaborate on, if the last two times Melo was available, LeBron James could have reached out and asked his team to pick him up. Lakers could have signed him this offseason. They chose not to. Cavs could have signed him. They chose not to, or traded for him back, you know, and he's been available several times over, and LeBron has not. And he's one of LeBron's closest friends in the sport. But LeBron not wanting him signifies to everyone else, hey, if LeBron doesn't want him, why should I? Now we'll see. As for the Trailblazers, they got a big stretch of games here where they're at home, right? They got Lakers, Thunder, Knicks, Warriors, Orlando, Minnesota, New Orleans, Lakers, and Phoenix, and only three road games mixed in there. They need to get back above 500 during this run. So the question about Melo, and look, I don't think he should have won the conference player of the week when you have what James Harden and Luka Doncic did in the exact same week. But what it is a reaction to he's not in the league, and then all of a sudden he has a couple of really good games against the Bulls. Everybody must be idiots. And no, the question about Melo is, will he continue to accept a tertiary role? Will he defend? What happens as he starts to hit kind of that wall, you know, without having camp and without having played early season games and some of these back-to-backs, he's not as worn down. That will catch up to him. He is in his mid-30s. Then how does he play? But also you got to ask yourself, what happened to the Houston Rockets? Speaking of the Houston Rockets, is there anything more Rockets than filing a protest over a clearly missed call? Like, no one's disputing, and I don't know how a coach's challenge can't overturn that missed call. It was a missed call. But you're up 22 points. You would have been up, I think, 17 or 19 at the time of the dunk. Is there anything more Rockets than filing a complaint and offering to replay the entire game or the fourth quarter because of one missed dunk that should have counted for two more points? The answer is no. That's who the Rockets are. We're not unfair to judge them. They're the same team that had a study about missed calls only to release it right before the NBA playoffs to try and prove that we're all wrong about them losing at home to the Warriors the year before when they missed 27 straight threes in game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. Like, we're all the idiots. That's what they're trying to convince us. Instead, it just feels like the Rockets being the Rockets. It's never their fault. It's never their style. It's never the fact that James Harden gets regular season calls but won't get postseason calls because jumping into people doesn't work in real basketball. Oh, so Rockets, right? That's almost what you should put. Oh, so Rockets. This is from TJ Murphy. TJ, did Jordan Bohannon make a mistake coming back too early? Brandon Keel actually answers and says no, because he can play two more games and still redshirt, come back next year. I don't know. Obviously, Jordan had such a good year, hitting so many big shots for them last year, that he probably just wanted to get out in the court. And considering how they looked early in the season, they needed him out on the court. What happens now is way more interesting. Way, way, way more interesting in terms of, does he play the entire year and can Iowa figure it out? I think they've shown signs. Look, with Wieskamp, with both McCaffrey boys, I think you have a lot of, with a guy who mean, personally, this is just my personal take. I think they're a super skilled team. I do. Isaiah Moss left, and I think he's going to be really effective for Kansas. Kansas kind of using them in their death lineup. And this is one of those deals I've been told where Isaiah Moss and his dad maybe had way bigger expectations of what he should have done, and Fran McCaffrey probably was too honest about Isaiah and what his role would be. But I think this is one of those classic, both were better off together than they are apart. Like, Isaiah ended up getting in a glamorous program. He's got a chance to win a Big 12 title and maybe a national title, and good for him. But he would have been a starter and a huge part of what they're doing in Iowa. Instead, here's Iowa, who's good. You know, who's good. They just beat Syracuse. They lost to San Diego State. Obviously, when they lost to DePaul, DePaul obviously has proven themselves to be good, but DePaul also hit everything they threw. And Jordan looked much better against Syracuse. Granted, he took 14 threes. I mean, but I like Luka Garza as a scorer. He's shown the ability to hit a three of his own. Like, scoring has never been the problem. I don't think they have, and they continue to not have, anyone who truly breaks down a defense. And then defensively, there's just a limitation there in terms of their overall athleticism. I don't think that's surprising anybody. So you're going to have to live with not being able to make up points. This is a great question from Dave in Philly. Who are my top 3 to 5 2020 NBA draft picks as of today? All right, I'll answer the five in a second. I will tell you the LaMelo Ball thing is kind of fascinating. Like, this is a lot like NFL highlights that we're seeing on Twitter. Like, LaMelo Ball shooting 37 and 25 from 2 and 3. And he's still not playing much defense, doesn't have good shot selection, avoids contact at all costs. Is he bigger than his brother? Yes. Can he really pass the basketball? Yes. But people don't want to put up with his dad. He doesn't appear to be a particularly good shooter, and he has some of the similar flaws in his form. And though his brother has become a big-time athlete and a big-time defender, to this point, LaMelo hasn't shown the desire to do either. All right, thanks so much for listening to All Ball. Make sure you check out the Daily Radio Show, 12 to 3 Pacific Time, 3 to 6 Eastern Time, SiriusXM 217, 203. You can download it like you download this podcast on iTunes, wherever you download podcasts. In the meantime, next week, Tony Allen will be my guest. Make sure you download, you tell a friend, and we'll always keep you updated on the stories currently breaking in the world of hoop. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.